From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Seconds, minutes, hours, days. We know how time is objectively measured, but we also know that some moments seem to last forever and others zoom by. The summer vacation that went by in a flash, a dangerous accident when time seemed to slow to a crawl. My guest today looks at the latest brain research to try to understand how we sense time and how it's influenced by our circumstances. This hour on Point, Time Warped, Human Perception of Time. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. What's your strange tale of time? When it raced by, when it stood still, the long and the short of it. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from London is Claudia Hammond. She is author of Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception, host of the BBC's All in the Mind, lecturer in psychology, celebrated explainer of all things psychological. Claudia, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks very much for having me.
You can hear a clock ticking behind us there, and those seconds sound quite uniform, at least from my end, in their duration. What do you mean time is malleable? How does that happen, Claudia?
Well, what's amazing is that not all seconds are the same, as you say. So those seconds that you just had ticking then sounded normal. But if you suddenly had dead air on the radio feels very long to the host. And it also feels long to people listening. It feels much longer than a few seconds do in normal everyday life. And if you take something like a 20-minute wait on a railway platform because your train is late and you know you're going to be late for a meeting and everything's going to be ruined, and minute by minute it gets later and later and you're standing there for 20 minutes, that will feel like an age to you. And yet that same 20 minutes, if you're trying to grab a sandwich with a friend and all you've got is 20 minutes for lunch and you're just getting chatting, and in no time at all you'll look at your watch and that 20 minutes has gone. So time may be all the same really out there, you know, in reality, but it doesn't feel like that to us. Our subjective experience of time feels very different at different moments.
I wondered, and I don't know how to make the distinction here exactly, but how much of this is purely psychological. I'm not sure what that means. How much of it is chemical? And the first time I really noticed this, and many others may have had some counterpart to this experience, perhaps you have, Claudia, but I was in high school, maybe 17 years old, driving my brother home from school. A tree had come down, blocked a stop sign. I was on a street that I did not know well. So I went through the stop sign, which was hidden behind these branches that had come down, and collided with another car. As the windshield blew out of the front of my car, I felt I could see every little piece of glass slowly flying through the air, as if I could have stopped and counted them one by one. It must have been a matter of just a couple of seconds, and yet it seemed an hour. Is that adrenaline somehow changing my sense of time? What's going on in that circumstance?
I mean, that is a very, very common experience that people will talk about, you know, times when they really felt their life was in danger, that time slowed right down. And I mean, I was in a car accident, had a very similar thing, and time just seemed to, I thought about so many things during that moment. And on another occasion, I was mugged, and I stayed very calm, but I thought about so many things, and it seemed to last ages, and it can only have taken, you know, a matter of seconds. And so what seems to be going on there is that, because we feel so afraid, for a start, fear begins to narrow our focus. And so you stop noticing things like the other cars going past, mm-hmm. or the music changing on the radio, or all those markers of time that are out there. You stop noticing those things. And also, emotion creates very, very strong memories. And so, you know, your memory of your car accident or my mugging, they're etched very strongly into our minds. And in order to judge how much time has passed, memory is one of the key things that we look at. We look at how many new memories we made, and then we gauge how much time seems to have passed.
Mm-hmm. So that memory comes into play, even though my sense of it is that in the moment time seems slowed down. You're saying that may be in part me reconstructing that later as I sat on the curb by the road looking at my demolished car.
That's right. I mean, basically, we actively construct our own experience of time in our minds. So obviously, you know, time is past. You know, physicists will argue about whether time passes at all, but there is something out there that's happening that is measurable. But we actively construct our own experience of time in our minds, and that's why it warps, and that's why it plays tricks on us. And we use various things. Various things will influence that. Our emotions will influence it. How much attention we're paying to something will influence it. So if you start paying attention to time itself, like if you're really, really, really bored, then time will feel as if it's going really slowly. When you pay no attention to time at all and you're having fun and you're doing nice things, then, as people say, you know, time flies.
In the case of an automobile collision, in this one, it was well out of my control at a certain point. We were just, you know, sort of flying through the air and spinning. But I wonder if this can be actively controlled. There's this term time dilation. And I was just reading something actually from a colleague of yours at the BBC talking with a Japanese investigator there in London about how professional athletes may, by practicing hyper-focus, in a sense, kind of slow time down so that the 90-mile-an-hour pitch that we see coming in American baseball may appear to be coming in more slowly to them. But things in other sports that seem to be happen in the flash of an eye to a professional athlete, perhaps they have time to watch them in a way that seems more leisurely.
Yes, I mean, because attention plays so much of a part in how we assess time passing, if you then try and control that attention, then you can change your perception of how that time feels to you. And so, you know, one way of making time more bearable, if you're waiting on that train platform forever, is to practice mindfulness, where people deliberately bring their awareness to the body and where they're standing on the station, and then deliberately notice all the different sounds, all the different senses, what you can see, what you can hear, and notice all those things. And that can change the speed at which time feels it's going and then make it not seem so unbearable that you're waiting there all that time.
Is there some dance going on in your book here, Claudia, between scientific time and perceived time? Are they different? Are they the same thing? I mean, you write that physicists tell us that, you know, that the popular notion of time segmented into past, present, and future is inaccurate, that time does not pass, time simply is. You say your book isn't about the objective reality of time, but rather the experience of it. Does that intersect somehow with the physics of time, or are they two different realms?
In a sense, I think they're two different realms. I mean, obviously they do intersect in that, you know, time is going on, but our experience of it does feel very different. And so we do, you know, very much talk about the past and the present and the future. And obviously they do all meld into one, but we very much feel as humans that it's passing in one long flow. And of course, the future immediately becomes the present. You know, they all change. And so the now that was now of a few seconds ago is now the past for us already. You know, mm-hmm. The start of your program is already the past. So, but we do feel as if we have these segments that we can divide it into. And of course, there's something people talk about very, very much. And we very much talk about the past. We very much talk about the future. And of course, people think ever such a lot about the future. And experiments using brain scanners and MRI scanners will tend to show that if you ask people to think about nothing at all, what they tend to then start thinking about is the future. It's almost as if that's a sort of default, mm-hmm. Yeah, that we can't help but start thinking about the future, which is probably a good thing. It does help us, you know, it helps us plan, and the fact that we can plan for the future makes us very different from other animals.
Well, it makes time the sort of fundamental organizing element of human life, the fact that we categorize into past and present and future and think so ceaselessly about time, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, we are, I think, very obsessed with time. And I think one of the reasons we are so obsessed with time is that it plays tricks on us and we never quite get used to those. That, you know, we're shocked at the years passing by and, you know, how can it be nearly summer again and then nearly Christmas and then nearly summer and you'll see some friends and you'll think you saw them, you know, maybe 2 months ago. And then it turns out that it was nearly a year ago and you just can't believe it. And as you, you know, approach middle age, these things creep up on you more and more. And we never quite get used to that. And I think that's why we're so obsessed with it. I think it's because it is very fundamental to our experience on a day-to-day basis. You know, in a way, time is experience.
Are we uniform as humans in how we experience time? Or in your research, have you found that different individuals experience time quite differently?
Different individuals do have different ways in which they focus on time. And so Philip Zimbardo's done, the psychologist, has done very interesting research showing that some people will have much more of a focus on the past, and others will have more of a focus on the future and be more future oriented. Others will be more past oriented. Others might be present oriented. And that a balance of all those, not surprisingly, seems to be what makes people happiest. But there are also really fascinating things like the Amundawa tribe in the Amazon doesn't seem to have a concept of time, and they don't have words for tomorrow or yesterday, and they don't seem to see time in the same way that the rest of us do. And there are also differences in how people see time in their minds, and whether they see time as something that they stay still and time comes towards them, or whether you move with the time. You stretch off into the future, if you like. And there seem to be really fundamental differences there. And that's something that seems to divide people half and half.
Claudia Hammond, please stand by in London. It's wonderful to have you with us. We're talking this hour about time and human perception. Claudia Hammond's book is Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. With a little Rocky Horror Picture Show Time Warp, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
To the left.
Let us get to
the right. Put your hands on your hips.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about time and human perception. Time flies. Time stands still. How we experience time. Claudia Hammond is with us from London. She's author of the book Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Claudia, I don't know if you had the news over there, but we've had some very big tornadoes around here recently in the U.S., I've got a little tape here. This is the kind of thing we heard out of Oklahoma just in the last week or two. This was in Indiana, March 2012. Huge tornado came down, destroyed Stephanie Decker's house. She held on to her two young children, Dominic and Reese, for what felt like forever.
Dominic and Reese were both screaming, please don't let me die. And I said, baby, we're not going to die. We're going to make it. And Dominic, my son, said, I can't do this without you. And I said, well, you've got me. I'm here. And it felt like forever with the tornado. I'm sure it was just a few minutes.
Just a few minutes. It felt like forever protecting those children. Here's another moment. May 9, 2011, the White House counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, now director of the CIA, recounted the real-time observation of the killing of Osama bin Laden, said minutes passed like days.
It was probably one of the most anxiety-filled periods of time, I think, in the lives of the people who were assembled here yesterday. The minutes passed like days, and the president was very concerned about the security of our personnel.
There, we in the U.S., Claudia, we have all stared at those images of the president and his team watching as the special forces were up the stairs and here and there in that house in Pakistan. Can imagine it seemed like days, but this isn't something that just a rarefied few have experienced. This is common to human experience, this slowing down or speeding up of time, Claudia.
That's right. I mean, this is so common. So many people will say that they've had time slow right down in some sort of terrifying accident. And this might tell us something about how it is that the brain is counting time, because this is something of a mystery. I mean, there are no one can find a single clock in the brain. There's no single area of the brain that, if it's damaged, damages all your ways of perceiving time. If you have certain areas of the brain damaged, then you might, say, not be able to judge seconds so well anymore, or milliseconds, but there's no one place where there seems to be one clock, and this has been something neuroscientists have been looking for. And then people are saying, well, maybe there's a series of clocks. But this experience that happens when people are really afraid might actually give us an insight into that. And there's one neuroscientist in the States, Bud Craig, and his theory is that we actually count time by registering, if you like, emotional moments, and that if something really terrifying is happening, then we keep registering, I'm terrified right now, you know, like that, mm-hmm. the poor woman trying to cling on to
check,
her kids.
Check,
I'm terrified
check.
Right mm-hmm. now, and they yep. check again mm-hmm. and again. And that actually they count more of those moments, and then that seems as if more time has passed, and as if the time has gone really slowly because you're so terrified.
So in that, seconds would have different weight depending on our tension and emotion and then our reliving of them in our memory, as you say.
That's right. And so we look at time in two ways. We look at it prospectively. We say, how fast is time going right now? You know, am I enjoying myself? Am I bored? How fast is it going now? And then we also look back retrospectively. And retrospectively, it can sometimes feel very different. So if you're ill, say, if you've got flu, you know, that week, you'd give anything to feel better again. And the time absolutely drags and every day goes by so slowly while you're waiting to feel better. But when you look back, there's very few memories being made in that time because you've done so little. And when you look back, that time will seem shorter, whereas for all those people looking back on those terrifying moments, it will seem a long time because they are going to remember all those things because that is something that's never happened to them ever before in their lives.
Claudia Hammond's book is Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. Let's do a little case study, Claudia. I have Robert Sabag with us right now. He's joining us from out on Cape Cod, South Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Survived a plane crash on a plane that was bound for Cape Cod years ago, in 1979, wrote about it in a book called Down Around Midnight, a memoir of a crash and survival. Done a lot of writing and thinking and living since then, but that experience has stuck with him. Robert Sabag, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Tom.
Talk to us about your experience of the minutes, I guess, of that crash and its aftermath.
Well, I think that one thing I would add to the plane hit the trees at over 140 miles an hour without warning. So time, in one sense, never had a chance to stand still
yeah.
in the course of the event
Boom.
Itself.
Yeah.
But what I would add to what Claudia has explained, time loses its seamlessness. It seems to, in my experience, it disintegrates. It transpires in fragments. So things crystallize in an almost literal sense. The event breaks down into individual facets. That's mm-hmm. how I experienced it.
In other words, instead of just kind of moseying along in a river of time, you have sudden flash images or experiences that
I would say that the time doesn't slow down so much as it fractures. So that instead of a movie, you find yourself watching a slideshow. Or at least that's my memory of the crash is a memory of events that are very specifically sequential, and I found that to be true of all the survivors I talked to. I remember myself acting in a very deliberative manner. Everything happened one at a time. So as I said, it crystallizes almost physically. Everything has its own.
Kind of framing or moment within the
well,
Claudia, how about that? This you write about the notion, the perception of a flow of time. What about in dramatic moments?
Yeah, it's not uncommon at all for people to describe this fragmentation of it. And I like this idea of seeing it almost as a slideshow. And we know that when people are in a really terrifying, life-threatening situation, you know, your mind, your brain is working absolutely overtime. You know, it's trying to do every single thing it can to try and save you. So, I mean, sometimes people will even, there was a very bad train crash in the UK, and some people who were the survivors of that described seeing in black and white, because your brain will shut down any processes that aren't necessary at all. And so, you know, color vision might not be necessary and you'll see in black and white. And in a sense, I think that could fit in with the fragmentation, the idea that your brain is forcing you to focus on the really important things and they don't need to flow in a sense. You know, you need to get those images of what's going on and what you might be able to do about it, if there is anything you can do about it. And so that definitely makes sense.
Robert, it's a long time since 1979. In the balance of your years of life, have you had any other moment where you perceived time with the same drama and fractured sense of that 140 mile an hour crash into the trees?
No, I can assure you nothing has ever come close to that experience, and thus never have I. That's why I suppose it remains so vivid in my describing it that way. I think that one of the things Claudia was talking about earlier that was very, I found to be very significant in my research into the neuroscience of it all, is how you lay down these memories. And I think that maybe it's the second to second laying down of individual memories. We know, I'm sure Claudia can explain this better than I, that traumatic experiences are encoded differently in the brain, and obviously they have to be. We have to remember bad things forever. That's necessary to the survival of the species. And it may very well be, or at least I suspect, in the encoding of those memories, the way they're encoded, that affects us as a perception of the flow of time. But as I said, Claudia is much more articulate about these things than I. I talked to one of the interesting things about the experience, interesting, I don't know if that's the right word, 30 years passed before any of the people who experienced this thing together ever saw each other or talked to each other again. They never saw each other after that night that we spent in the woods. And in interviewing them 30 years later and talking to them, I was quite surprised that our memory, our collective memory of the event was exactly the same. Nobody remembered it any differently from the other.
That's interesting.
What was different is that different people remembered different things. You know, I might have forgotten that thing, and you might have forgotten this thing, or you might not have been there when
Of time.
Yeah, but everybody remembered the experience exactly the same 30 years later.
Robert Sabag wrote Down Around Midnight, a memoir of crash and survival. Robert, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Claudia, we've got so many people, you know, giving us different sort of facets on this. Here, Leah writes, time goes by very fast when you look back on it. My son is turning 4 on Friday, and I can't believe it is here already. Where have the past 4 years gone? There's one angle. Here's Christine, says he worked as a nurse on a hospital floor. Frantic time slipped by. Do this, do that. You know, it flew by. It was never boring, but the stress was too much. She had to get away from that, but that flow of time is different now. And here's Annabelle, says, in 2005, my husband was killed by an elderly driver. The hours by his bedside seemed an eternity. The months after he passed are a blur, as though they never happened. And I can't remember most of the first year after. So many different textures right there in those just three experiences, Claudia.
Yeah, there are so many different things that happen with time and so many different experiences and experiences that everyone has, and regardless of the different things that happen to them, good or bad. And the thing that your first person said there is very common with parents, particularly parents of young children, that the days seem very long at the time. And particularly, you know, if you're dying for them to go to sleep, then the days can seem very, very long. But looking back, because the days are quite similar to each other, then people ask, where has the time gone? And they think it feels as if it went very fast, although at the time it was slow. And that's because there are so many repeated experiences and routines in that. You know, there's endless, you know, changing nappies and feeding them again and again and again and bathing them. And those experiences are similar to each other each time. And so they don't fill up a load of your memory. And because we set so much store on judging how much time has passed by how many new memories we've made, then that time seems to shrink when you look back. Whereas the opposite happens, say, with the nurse, with Christine, who was so completely frantic, because there is no time to think at all if it's so frantic like that. And, you know, time passes fast, which can be, you know, can be a good thing, you know, unless it's all too much. And then I was very, very struck by the person whose husband had died, that that fragmentation of time during that year afterwards and almost not remembering very much is something that people will quite often say after a bereavement, that things all do become a blur, whereas of course they remember the things surrounding that person dying, you know, very, very well, because again those become etched into your memory in the same way that fear does.
And here's Reginald, I mean a more mundane level, but it says, you know, time slows down when I'm at work, it speeds up when I'm off. The weekend goes by fast.
Weekends do go by very, very fast. But you see, you can make them go more slowly if you want to. And that is by filling them with lots of new activities and different things so that you create these new memories. I mean, I call this the holiday paradox, that you go on holiday and it seems everything's new and you can go and see loads of new things in a day and you create all these new memories and it's all really good fun. And then in no time at all, you're halfway through the week and you're thinking, right, I've been looking forward to this for ages and where's it gone? But then when you get back, it feels
gone.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's it. But when you get back, it can suddenly feel as if you've been away for longer than that. Then it feels longer looking back. And that's, again, because we look at time in these two ways, right now and also retrospectively. And retrospectively, your holiday was full of new memories and new experiences. And whereas in an average fortnight, if you ask people to remember all the things they've done, people only remember, on average, about between 6 to 9 different things they've done, because there are so many things that we do that are repeated in life. But on holiday, there's loads of new things. And so what you need to do if you want the weekend to seem longer is to fill it with new experiences. Go and do something new on Saturday morning and something else on Saturday afternoon and fill it all up. And by the time you get to Monday morning, it'll feel as if the weekend was longer than it was. Now, obviously, you've got to trade rest for doing that. And you may just want to rest and put your feet up. Right. The weekend will go faster, right, if you do that.
People are sharing so many observations here. The texture of these, I just love. Candace says, I mean, it's not fun, but it's rich. She says, watching my grandmother pass away last summer, it felt like time was standing still, or that I was experiencing a sense of timelessness. Every breath she took was such a gift as we said our goodbyes, and the unknowing of when that moment would come seemed to suspend time. Catherine writes to us, it feels as if time is at a near standstill when my 2-year-old has a tantrum in public or refuses to fall asleep. On the other hand, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm in my 40s when it feels like just a few years ago I was in high school. Miles is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Miles. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. When I heard your topic today, I immediately thought of the opening lines of my favorite poem, T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets. Deals with sort of the unity of the three aspects of time, caught up in almost an eternal present moment. I think he's relying very heavily on St. Augustine's theology of time that's laid out in the Confessions, but I'll just read the lines for you, and I'd love to hear any thoughts anybody has on it.
Yes.
Time present and time past are both perhaps present and time future, and time future contained in time past. If all time is eternally present, all time is unredeemable. What might have been is an abstraction, remaining a perpetual possibility only in a world of speculation. What might have been and what has been point to one end, which is always present. Thanks, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Miles. Claudia, T.S. Eliot, dive in with us here.
Yeah, they're lovely. They're lovely, those lines. And you know, the fact that he's, you know, trying to sum up almost, you know, how we shouldn't have regrets, and that, you know, that time will all, it kind of is all one thing, and yet we feel these separate bits, but they all do flow into each other, and, you know, they all become each other, and time is sort of, feels like a straight line, but it's weirdly circular in a sense.
I mean, there's poetry. It seemed to come very close to physics when Einstein spoke. You know, Einstein said time is an illusion. Maybe it's not just all in our heads. Maybe our varied experience of it is in some way related, certainly beyond poetics even, to the very physics of it.
Yes, I mean, it does seem to have to be related to it in some way, because whatever, you know, physicists will say, in a sense, we know that this year isn't last year, and it doesn't feel like last year to us. And you know, like the callers who were saying that they can't believe, you know, where have the years gone? Why aren't they teenagers anymore? You know, something is happening there. Something is going on, and that's very much how it feels to us.
Claudia Hammond's book is Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. Broadcaster, writer, psychology lecturer joins us today from London. Tom Waits behind us with Time off his album Rain Dogs. This is On Point. We'll be right back. And it's time, time, time. And it's time, time, time. And it's time, time, time that you love. And it's time. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about time and human perception. Time flies. Time stands still. How we experience time. Claudia Hammond is my guest. She is author of Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. There's a nice excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Our caller Miles raised T.S. Eliot, Claudia. We've got a little tape of another of his poems, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, 1915 poem, where T.S. Eliot also took on this issue of time. Here he is.
There will be time, there will be time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions, before the taking of a toast and tea.
Time. Just that way of recitation puts me in a certain kind of time mind frame. And here's another. Here's Andy Rooney. This is on 60 Minutes in 2010. He was 91 years old, describing that feeling of time moving fast.
Something's got to be done about the passage of time. It's got to be slowed down. The days, the weeks, the months, and the years go by too fast. Our lives go by too fast.
The commentator, Andy Rooney, there. You write about age and time, Claudia, and why, as people get older, time seems to move more quickly.
Yeah, it's very, very common for people to say that the, you know, the years seem to be speeding up as they get older, and particularly in middle age. It can often, in research, seem to slow down again when people reach older age. But middle age, people will particularly be very aware of this and you know, be horrified. And, I do this myself. I keep seeing things I own in vintage shops, and I think, how is this possible? You know, and I'm 41, but I sort of think, how is this possible? You know,
My youth is vintage already.
That's not vintage, exactly. How can this be possible? Possible that people want to buy that. So, it's definitely is shocking for people how fast the months and years seem to go. And one of the explanations that people often give for this, they'll often say, oh, I know why that is. It's all about proportions. And they'll say that, you know, when you're 8 years old, a year of your life is an eighth of your life. And when you're 40, it's a 40th of your life.
Yes.
So no wonder it seems to go quickly. And many people said that. And this was originally proposed by a philosopher, Paul Janet, in the 19th century. And Vladimir Nabokov wrote about it. This has been a very popular explanation for people. But in a sense, it's only a description of what happens rather than an explanation, because if that held, then when you were 40, one day should absolutely flash by because it's only 1/14,000th of your life so far. And yet when you actually ask people, they say that the days are still passing at a normal speed, at an average speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weeks and the months and the year, you know, that it's always Monday, that it's those things that seem to be going fast, not the actual days. And so that doesn't seem to give a full explanation of what's going on there. Part of the reason is that there are more and more routines as we get older, so we make fewer memories. And so there's this thing known as the reminiscence bump, which is that between the ages of 15 and 25, we remember far more things. If you ask people what their favourite music is, or to think about some books they really liked or a film they've really enjoyed.
You know, all through their lives, that period will be the richest font
They'll
of memory.
They'll often pick those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All through their lives, this 15 to 25 age bit will be the bit you remember loads of things from. Or if you say to people, tell me about a time when you were really happy or a time when you were really sad. Again, those memories really seem to stick in that age group. And that's partly because it's a time when the brain goes through some more development. It's a time when we're searching for identity. But of course, it's also a time for lots of firsts. You know, so it's the first time going on vacation without your parents. It's the first time living away from home. There's all sorts of firsts in that time. So you're going to remember all those. And then, of course, as you get older, there are fewer of those. And so if we think about this thing of how we judge time passing by making new memories, then you make fewer of those new memories as you get older. But I think it's also related to this holiday paradox that I was talking about. If you apply that to middle age, then basically the days, you know, prospective time estimation, how it's going now, tells us that it's going at a normal speed. And then suddenly there's this shock of these markers in time that you see the things you own in vintage shops, or that you realise that some huge news story, it's the 20th anniversary of some news story that you think was really recent, or, you know, that JR was shot in 1980. How's that possible?
How is that possible?
I remember that far too well.
So long.
1980.
Go, a tragic shock can slow down time, but so can the utterly mundane. Karthik Lakshmi writes to us, stare at the microwave and notice how long a minute really is. Yes, I know that. Sarah in a different London. London, Kentucky is calling. Sarah, you're on the air with Claudia in London, England.
London, Kentucky. But thank you, and thank you for having me. I wanted to just say my timeless moment was I was walking out my front door, and in front, about 30 yards away, is a bird feeder, a T-bar bird feeder, that's usually full of birds and chattering away and so on and singing. And all of a sudden, they flew away, and then there was just almost total silence, and a hawk came out of the sky, right almost onto that T-bar. I mean, it must have missed it by by an inch. And I was, as a result, it was also coming straight at me. So I had this bird's eye view of total terror. And yet for me, it was total awe. It was like it swept up not just time, but sound and motion into its wings. And I swear the earth stood still.
You were facing a sort of a bird avian mortality right there with the hawk.
Exactly.
Oh, good heavens. Yes, we can just feel. I mean, thank you for that, Sarah. Claudia, there it is, your utterly unique experience, and time slows down.
Yes, and you have, so you haven't necessarily got to be terrified. You know, Sarah said she was in awe. You know, it can be an amazing thing. And some people will deliberately seek this, you know, seek this timelessness, if you like. There's this concept known as flow, whereas if you're really, really absorbed in something, and people, if they're lucky, can find the things in their life that give them flow. And it might be, you know, some people might find it's gardening or doing a painting. But you can do something for hours and hours and be completely unaware of the time passing because you're so absorbed by it. And people will almost describe that as stepping outside time itself. It's not the time's going fast, it's not the time's going slowly. You've almost stepped outside it, and it doesn't feel as if it's carrying on anymore.
I'm fascinated by the manipulation of that, or our active interaction with these different gears of time. Jamie writes to us. She says, as a dancer, artist, musician, when you're in the zone of creating something, time seems to slow down like the scene in a movie, and you feel like you can see everything more clearly and react to it more quickly, like you have some sort of superpower, like you could reach your hand in between the ticking seconds and change the fabric of the world. That's an extraordinary experience, but I think people who deal in the arts or sports that are time-related, maybe even in radio, I'll share some understanding of that.
Yes, Claudia. I mean, that Jamie's description there of being in the zone is a fantastic description of flow, of what's happening there. And I think, people with different jobs that have something, some time-related element to them, they do get very good at judging particular time frames as well. So a lot of friends of mine who are clinical psychologists who have 50-minute sessions with their clients say, without even looking at their watch, even though some sessions are really boring because the person's a bit boring and some sessions are much more interesting than others, they still always know when it's exactly 50 minutes. And, and I'd imagine that you as a radio host like me, you know what a minute feels like, or you know what 30 seconds feels like. If that 30 seconds is coming up to the end of your program, you know exactly what that feels like. So people will get used to very different time frames, and there have been various studies done with musicians who are particularly good at millisecond time frames, because of course getting the milliseconds right is essential for music, and is what makes us understand music, is what makes music work, is that there are these millisecond timings that are just right.
Or in just the seconds before a show goes on the air, where there's a million things to be done, and there's 30 seconds, which in my old life would have seemed like nothing, but now in 30 seconds, I realize I can consider quite a number of elements sort of planning forward just by, somehow thinking of 30 seconds as 30 minutes and treating it that way. Or here's another. You mentioned musicians. Gregory writes to us. He says, as a musician, he finds this very interesting. He says, during a performance, I am very aware, he writes, of metric time. That is the pulse and tempo of the music, placing notes and phrases in the proper place and time, accuracy of time, etc. What I found is that when I'm focused on this perception of time, I have very little awareness of clock time. Interesting, just two approaches to time, Claudia, there.
And so he's almost, again, sort of outside time because he's got to just be in the music at that moment, but of course is very aware of timing in one sense because that exact tempo of the music is so important and it's so essential to get that right.
Which gets back to what is time, more than one thing. Andrew in Brattleboro, Vermont. Andrew, you're on the air with Claudia Hammond. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say my deployment with the Army to Kuwait in 2002 in the Iraq War felt like years on end, but the 10 years in between, because this year is the 10-year anniversary,
yeah,
it feels like it flew by like nothing.
How long were you in Kuwait with that deployment, Andrew?
I went in November 2002, and then through the invasion of Iraq, I was there. And came home in the middle of 2003.
So we're talking 8-9 months there.
Yeah, it felt like years on end.
Was it because you were spending so much time just waiting, because you did not enjoy it? Why do you think it seemed?
Mostly getting ready for, getting everything prepared, set up. It took for, and then there was a lot of waiting before the actual invasion, so.
Yeah. But, And the 10 years since, boom, by in a flash. Andrew, thank you for that. Claudia, there you are again. That sort of the different faces, and one so long and one so short. Even though by the calendar, 10 times as long.
Yes, and waiting, of course, is something, particularly when people aren't in control of how long that waiting will be for, is something that can really, really slow down. And for my book, I spoke to the BBC journalist Alan Johnston, who was held hostage for 4 months. And now, of course, he didn't know when he was in Gaza that he was only going to be held for 4.5 months, although that seems long enough to me. But, of course, he didn't know it wasn't going to be years and years. And he just said that, he said, if you want to imagine what it's like, that you should take everything, get a room in your house and take everything out apart from one plastic chair, and you sit there for say 3 hours and then have a little walk about, sit there for another 4 hours, then sit there for another 3 hours, and still it's ages before it's time to go to sleep. But you know, there is something about waiting that really makes time hang heavy.
Jamie in Indian Rocks Beach, Florida. Thanks for calling, Jamie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Experience for me with time that I just still can't shake was when my father died. Time became almost a visual experience for me. I don't know any other way to say that. It was almost like I had this feeling that we were all in this boat together. And when he died, he dropped out of the boat. My boat couldn't turn around and get him. I had to continue on. And he was off. And I had to keep looking forward. And I couldn't stop time. I wanted to, because I wanted him not to have died. But that's just the way it was, and time just, that boat just kept moving, and time kept moving on.
There's that flow metaphor, and even beyond to the boat. Jamie, thank you for that. And Claudia, you write about how you yourself, maybe like Jamie, you're something of a synesthete, visualizing all kinds of things, including the passage of time. What about that visualization?
Yeah, so I mean that's an extraordinary visual experience there, and yes, to actually see it as a boat on a river. So we know that 1 in 5 people seem to, in some sense, visualize time, and this is thought of as a type of synesthesia where different senses, you know, cross over. And so this might be as simple as, you know, people having days of the colors for days of the week that they see every time, or seeing, a lot of people see the and I do this, see the months of the year laid out before them. So I always imagine when anybody mentions any month and says, you know, are you free in September or whatever to do something. I imagine the year is like an oval. In my case, it's anti-clockwise. And in more people's cases, it goes anti-clockwise than clockwise. But some people have much more elaborate versions. You know, they will see the centuries as a wallpaper pasting table with wallpaper all coming off the end in rolls. And they'll see, you know, different things, the Elizabethans and everything all spread out. So they can be really quite extraordinary things that people see in their mind's eye as their way of understanding time, in a sense.
Even the sense of flow can go in different directions. I mean, you spoke of whether people imagine time coming at them or themselves wading into time. You describe an instance where somebody says in a memo that we've got to move forward our Wednesday meeting by 2 days. To some people, moving a Wednesday meeting forward by 2 days might mean Monday, and to others it might mean Friday.
Yeah, this is an amazing question because it divides people absolutely half and half. And so if you say to people, yes, Wednesday's meeting is being moved forward 2 days, what day is it now? People will often say, oh, I always get this wrong. And they don't actually get it wrong. What they mean is that they've had situations where other people say the other answer. And what this does represent, your answer to this question, and people can answer it very instinctively and very fast, and your answer does show how you see time. So if you answer Monday to that, it's that you stay still and you see time coming towards you. The summer's coming, the vacation is coming, Christmas is coming. If you answer Friday, then you see it the other way around. You see yourself as going off forward into time. You know, I'm going towards the summer, I'm going towards Christmas. And this does seem to split people in a really interesting way. And there are times when it changes. So if there's something that people are dreading, like, say, the dentist or exams, then they're more likely to see them as coming towards them. But on the whole, people have this very set view of the way that they see it. And, you know, I myself have had people, you know, they'll say, oh, we're moving a program you're doing forward by a month. And I think, oh, no, I can't possibly do it in time. And they say, well, why are you upset? This is easy. You've got longer. And I just see it in different ways.
We've just got half a minute. Do you think that we see time differently from our forebears, if we want to look at it that way, in history, with technology and modern pace of life and so on? You must have read.
It's a very good question. I mean, it takes a long time. You know, it takes a long time for the brain to change, but it is possible. You know, we are very used to films and so on are getting shorter. You know, people are getting used to watching shorter things. But then on the other hand, there is no good evidence yet that attention spans are getting shorter. You know, people always say, oh, they think they must be getting shorter, but actually, you know, they're not. It's not the case that they are.
Well, our children's book writer, Dr. Seuss, asked the question, how did it get so late so soon? There's that play of time. Claudia Hammond, we're grateful for you delving into this and sharing your insights on it with us today. Thank you very much for joining us from London.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Claudia Hammond, author of Time Warped, Unlocking the Mysteries of Time Perception. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for being with us today. A little Weezer with Time Flies. This is On Point.